Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, celebrating the Aliento Tequila photo exhibit with a tequila tasting and other entertainment, November 8th, 6 to 9 p.m. Ticket info and more at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Now through Election Day, Tuesday, November the 5th, Texas voters have the chance to approve or deny 10 proposed amendments to the state constitution. These amendments cover various parts of the state. Some of them include deals with the taxation, including an exemption for precious metals or even prohibiting a state income tax. Do you have a hot take on... Do you have a hot take on any of these propositions? Call in. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour by Al Kaufman, professor at St. Mary's School of Law. Professor Kaufman, welcome back to the source.
Pleasure to be here.
And also with us is Grace Chamaine, president of the Texas League of Women Voters. Grace, welcome to the source. And also here with us online is Matthew Watkins, political news editor for the Texas Tribune. Matthew Watkins, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start off. I'm going to get straight to the big one, the big kahuna, which is Prop 4. And that is the one that will ask Texas voters whether or not to prohibit a personal income tax in the state. A lot of people kind of are, you're seeing some weird confusion online, although it's very straightforward. Should Texas prohibit a state personal income tax? And so, Al Kaufman, why would we vote on something like this?
Well, the Texas Constitution requires votes on more things than any constitution in the United States, any of the states, except maybe for Alabama, and especially in the area of taxation. The way the original Constitution was written, it basically did not allow the legislature to pass taxes without somehow going through a vote.
And Grace Chamaine, president of the League of Women Voters of Texas, this Prop 4 seems to be the one that's taking up the most space when we're talking about the Big Ten, right?
Right, it does. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Prop 4 seems to be what voters are most interested in, and it seems to be getting more news than many of the other propositions.
What happens if it passes, Grace Chamaine?
What happens is that it just makes it harder for the Texas legislature, if for some strange reason they decided to have in the future this kind of tax, that it would make it more difficult for them to pass this legislation. They'd have to have a higher number of people who voted for the legislation in order for it to go to be voted in and to go to the voters. One of the interesting things is that isn't it true that it not only makes it more difficult to vote in any kind of income tax, but it also changes where that income tax will end up going if perchance it ever did pass. Right now, if it passes, my understanding is it would go to the public education, and if this does pass, it would not in the future.
Right. So currently, we passed a state constitution amendment a while back saying that in order to have a statewide personal income tax, it would have to be used for two purposes. One of them is to pay down property taxes, and the other reason is for education. And it would take, and that amendment also required that there would be a referendum across the state in order to pass that. But what this one does, if it passes, it supersedes that amendment, and now it just becomes a complete prohibition on it. And so, Matthew Watkins, what happens if Prop 4 fails?
Well, if Prop 4 fails, we are kind of in the same situation we are in now, which is there is no state income tax, and it would still be pretty hard to impose one. So right now, in order, if the state wanted to impose an income tax, the legislature majorities in both the House and the Senate would have to pass it, and then it would go to a vote for the residents of Texas. You know, the constitutional amendment would kind of up that ante. You know, you could still change the Constitution like we do, you know, every so often after every legislative session, basically. But in order to get that on the ballot, you would need two-thirds support by the legislature, the House and the Senate. Obviously, that's, you know, another bar that would need to be passed. You know, it's worth noting, though, that there's not exactly a big clamoring, you know, among people in the Capitol or outside of the Capitol for a income tax. This is a situation where, you know, this is, I think, being viewed as a preventative measure by the lawmakers who proposed it. You know, a movement to impose an income tax right now would not have a lot of support in the Capitol if it were to come up.
Right. So, Matthew, since you're the politics news editor for the Texas Tribune, I can ask you this. It seems like, and I've seen a fundraising email from Governor Greg Abbott saying the socialists are trying to take over Texas, and if they do, they're going to put in a statewide income tax, and that's why we need to pass this, and this is why you need to send me some money. And this is this kind of like an insurance policy if Texas does flip blue?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, there's definitely the possibility that that was on the minds of lawmakers when this came up, that, you know, we've seen what's happened in recent elections. The Democrats have made gains. There's talk of possibly the Democrats having a chance to flip the Texas House, gain control of the Texas House in 2020. So that could be on people's minds. You know, an income tax is still pretty unpopular when you poll voters or when you talk to lawmakers, even Democrats in the Capitol. You know, there's definitely not some kind of guarantee here that if the Democrats were to take control of the Capitol, that all of a sudden there would be an income tax. There's kind of a long history of not having this in Texas. It's not a popular idea. I mean, we'll see how the voters react to this in November, but you know, it's definitely not as clear cut as if we don't pass this proposition, then we'll soon have an income tax.
And Matthew, is there some sort of political advantage to putting things on the ballot? If there is, I don't see it. Maybe you can help me see it. To get people enthused, to fan the flames of your base. You know, I've seen things on these Constitution amendments, and I'm thinking of in 2005 on Prop 2, which was the Definition of Marriage Act, which passed throughout Texas with 76% of the vote. The only two cities that didn't pass those major cities was Austin and Laredo. Why put something like that on the ballot? Something like this, is this just to give red meat to your base?
Yeah, you know, I think it's to be able to say, look at the work we did in the last legislative session. We made it so you can never have an income tax in Texas. You know, that's not entirely true, but you could definitely see a campaign email, a commercial making that case in 2020. You know, in terms of driving out attendance to the ballot in 2019, there's not a whole lot else that's on the ballot. We've got a few special elections. There's one in particular that could be competitive. There's a mayoral race in Houston. But you saw, you know, with the gay marriage amendments across the country last decade, you know, people saw that in some cases as an effort to bring out, you know, red meat religious conservatives to the polls, you know, who might also vote in legislative races or congressional races or even presidential races. You know, because this is a 2019 election, none of those things are on the ballot this time around. So I think it's really more about the lawmakers being able to say, look, this is something we accomplished in 2019. When we came together as a legislature.
Right. And so in 2005, 76% of Texans voted yes to define a marriage as only a man and a woman. Now, I doubt that would be the case. It shows you how the political tides change, and Texans could vote, think very differently 10 years from now about a personal income tax. We're going to take a break. We're talking about the 10 propositions on the ballot. You want to hear your hot take, any prop that you feel strong about, give us a call, 210-614-8990. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Proposition 1, that's before the voters right now, of the 1 of 10. It is permitting a person to hold more than one office as a municipal judge at the same time. That seems kind of quirky to me. Grace Chemaine, president of the League of Women Voters of Texas, what is this all about?
Well, municipal judges serve in communities all over Texas, in counties and cities, and some of them are appointed judges, and those appointed judges are able to serve in various communities, whereas an elected judge is only allowed at this moment to serve for their specific place where they were elected. And so this amendment allows those elected municipal judges to fill in for judges in other areas, perhaps close by where a judge is going on vacation or there isn't enough judges to help out in certain cases. And so this allows elected municipal judges to also fill in other areas where they weren't elected.
The number to call in is 210-614-8980. If you want to join our conversation, we're talking about the Texas constitutional amendments that are now before Texas voters. Matthew Watkins, the news editor, political news editor for Texas Tribune, something like this, Prop 1, it seems, you know, pretty narrow.
Yeah, you know, sometimes these are, you know, basically kind of clerical changes. There's a few of these on the ballot that, you know, won't have a huge effect on people's lives. It's someone identifies a problem, you know, maybe there's a particular city that's having an issue with municipal judges or needing more. They bring it to the attention of their state lawmaker and it ends up on the ballot. That's, you know, just because of the nature of the Texas Constitution. There are a lot of rules prescribed in there, and you know, there are a lot of changes. You know, there's possible 10 changes that could be made to the Constitution this year. It's not like our federal government where it's a huge deal to amend the Constitution.
Al Kaufman, professor at St. Mary's School of Law. You brought in a copy of the Texas Constitution, and it's three volumes in front of me. You know, so this is it's massive.
Well, with all the notes and descriptions of the cases, it's about a foot of it's about 10 books. But just in itself, it's 270 pages, the Texas Constitution. And the problem is, once you have these general propositions that you can't have taxes without a member of the Constitution, you can't change office holders without a member of the Constitution. Once you have that, then it just feeds on itself, that every time you make an amendment, you make it more difficult for the legislature to do anything, so you need another constitutional amendment. So it's very confusing. It's hard to keep track of, and the votes of the people are very important, but very rarely do the people who vote for all those propositions understand overall what's at stake.
So how do you balance that out, the fact that we require people to vote on some of these very narrow decisions to be made, and some of them are pretty big at times, and then people don't really understand the nuance of what it is that they're weighing in on?
Well, of course, it's up to people like the League of Women Voters and all of us involved in the public sphere to go out there and talk about these things as we're doing today. But certainly there is a way to have a simpler document. And the U.S. Constitution's only been amended 27 times through, 250 years of history.
So, it's not really a good comparison, though, because, the U.S. Constitution is a framework. And then, you know, but the bulk of the do's and don'ts of what you get to do comes from the states.
Well, that's true. But a lot of state constitutions are much simpler than Texas's and may give a lot more discretion to the legislature and to the executive and don't require as many amendments. Now, I'm not saying I'm all against that process. I think it was part of Texas history where there was just an opposition to any sort of central authority or central power. And by requiring constitutional amendments, it slows down anything that the legislature wants to do. But on the other hand, it just straitjackets what the legislature can do. I've worked on the area of school finance, and the constitutional provisions there make it almost impossible to come up with a constitutional system because of all the barriers to any sort of statewide ad valorem tax, for instance.
Now, this Proposition 2, assistance for water projects in distressed areas, what's behind that, Matthew Watkins?
Sure. Well, there, there are this would set aside some money in the state coffers to allow for the Texas Water Board to devote some money to projects in areas where the median income is at or below 75% of the statewide average. This would basically allow certain areas that are not served, maybe don't have a lot of tax revenue of themselves, to build up infrastructure. You know, there's areas along the border, areas in rural areas that have a lot of water issues and don't have access to clean drinking water. This would, you know, to in some pardon parts, my pun, but be a drop in the bucket to address some of those issues.
Yeah, and in West Texas, we've seen some communities stressed. And Grace Chamaine with the League of Women Voters, I know you don't have a position on these, but certainly a case can be made that all citizens deserve clean water.
I would hope so, and that is one of the arguments we found that was for it. And so if what I think would be useful is if the voters who are interested in voting in this election, which I think all voters should, because it's our chance to have a say in the election, if they go and they look, we tried to find like three arguments for and three arguments against for all of these just by talking to many people. And voters can really see a simplified version of this and try to understand what's going on so they can make an informed decision.
But also, Grace, I want to make this point as well, that in this era of a very aggressive voter purging that we see in Texas and other states, that people need to exercise their vote as frequently as possible in order to make sure that their voter registration remains active, correct?
Right, they do. They do need to vote in elections in order to keep their voter registration active. But that's not hard to do. I think they have to vote. If you vote in most of the presidential elections, you'll be able to keep your voter registration active. It's important to go ahead and check to make sure your voter registration is up to date and is working. And you can go to do that at many websites, but you have to actually register to vote and sign something and turn it into your county voter registrar.
Proposition 3 is tax relief for disaster areas. Can you tell us more about that, Grace Chamaine, with the League of Women Voters of Texas?
Tax relief is...
So after Hurricane Harvey, we had many counties, I'm thinking of especially like Port Aransas mm-hmm. County, Aransas Pass County, the smallest county in Texas. They were hammered, and they basically lost their tax base, you know, when they were trying to recover. And the people were hammered because they're having to pay their taxes while also trying to rebuild.
Right, and their property isn't worth as much as it was. And what this does, what this Proposition 3 does, is try to make it easier. It tries to create a system that a local government can use in order to provide tax exemptions that are so that it's easier and quicker for those that are impacted by these type of environmental disasters. I think it does impact the coastal areas, especially of Texas, but think about what happened in Dallas recently. It could impact any of us.
With the tornadoes?
With the tornadoes, yes.
Right. And so, Al Kaufman, how do you get a proposition to get it on the ballot? How hard is that?
It's not too hard because the only proposals that are all ever brought up are fairly popular ones, but you still need 2/3 of each house to pass the resolution, and then you need a vote of the people of the state.
So, does the governor have to sign it?
Well, if it's 2/3 vote, they would overcome the veto. So the governor doesn't have to sign it. So you've already got your veto-proof majority in each house. So that's put on the ballot, and that's as far as it goes. Now, the advantage of the 2/3 is that Texas, of course, is now a red state, was a long time a blue state. It requires some agreement among the parties to get 2/3 of each house.
So you do need some bipartisan.
You need some bipartisan. At least right now in the Texas House, you need that to get to 2/3. In the Senate, you really don't.
So on Prop 4, which we talked about earlier, the personal income tax question, it only got on to the ballot by one vote.
It was very close in both the House and in the Senate.
So they were saying that it really took some convincing, or also telling some lawmakers, you don't want anyone saying that you're in favor of a personal income tax.
Well, sure. That was an easy political argument to make. No one wants to go out and say, I was the only legislator who voted in favor of the income tax. The fact is, there is no income tax in Texas. And to get an income tax, back to your earlier discussion, you would need a vote of the people to ever get an income tax. It would have to get through the legislature and then be voted on by the people. So any issues that are there would still be brought up when it goes to the state election.
And Matthew Watkins, with Texas as one of seven states that does not have a personal income tax, it seems to be a point of pride for many folks that Texas doesn't do it. And one of the arguments that's been brought forth by the proponents of this proposition is that this is pro-business, and this signals to people who want to relocate to Texas that will continue to be a low-tax state.
Sure, yeah. It's an economic development pitch. Getting companies to come here, it might be attractive to employees to work in a place where they're not going to have to pay a state income tax. You even see it in sports. Athletes that are making millions of dollars can possibly bring in a little bit more money playing for a Texas sports team than they might for a California sports team. So it definitely has it's a source of pride among some people, like you said, and it's a sales pitch as well.
But
remember, I just think it's important to point out that this really does hurt poor people, that when you have taxes on sales and property and not on income tax, the tax burden in general is forced on the low-income persons.
Because we don't have a personal income tax, Texas is more reliant on a property tax, which hurts middle-class homeowners hardest, and also a sales tax, which hurts the paycheck-to-paycheck working guy the hardest, right?
That's right.
And so by not having a personal income tax, which is a progressive graduated tax, which is actually protects people who are big earners, like big football players, as Matthew Watkins pointed out.
That's right. And of course, the state has to take its position it wants, and voters have to vote as they wish. I'm just saying they have to understand that an income tax is probably the fairest and most equitable tax available to the state.
So we've got a question from Bert online. If there's a state income tax, how would that revenue be distributed, Matthew Watkins?
Well, that would, I guess, be kind of, if you were to say this passes, right, this amendment, you would need a constitutional amendment to override it. And so ultimately, I think there would be a little bit of a freedom there. If you're going to change the Constitution anyway, you might be able to kind of set up a specific fund. One area that has been talked about, as we talked about before, is education. In this past session of the legislature, there was a big push to increase education funding, public education funding, and they had a hard time finding ways to do that. They wanted to buy down property taxes, but also boost funding for schools. There was talk of raising the sales tax in order to do that. That ended up being quite unpopular for the reasons that Al mentioned, because that's, in fact, a regressive tax. But I think the kind of obvious place that people would probably look would be to be funding the schools.
Right. So probably, as you say, if someone is a campaign, we need more revenue in Texas, we need a personal income tax, they'll have to make promises along the lines. And probably it will include dedicating a source to schools and paying down property taxes, which is the way it's supposed to be according to law right now. Is that what you're saying, Matthew?
Yeah, I think so. You're going to have to get voter approval no matter what in order to impose an income tax, whether that's under the current rules or if Proposition 4 passes under new rules. And in order to do that, you would need to make a case to voters, this is what this money is going to be used for.
Okay, we've got more propositions to work through. We've got six more left, and also our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment about any of the propositions, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Are you concerned about a personal income tax being brought to Texas? Or do you think that it would maybe be a good idea and it'd be a way to lower property taxes and generate revenue for the good of the people in the state? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Have you voted? Were you confused when you voted? Are you looking forward to voting? Give us a call. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Texas constitutional amendments. Some are big and they make big changes in Texas, and some are very narrow, but still they require you to go vote on them. If you got a question or a comment, if you heard about this Prop 4, which is about a state personal income tax, it would permanently ban a state income tax. You would have to have another amendment to repeal it. So if you vote yes, you're voting for the ban. If you vote no, you're voting against the ban. But no matter how you vote, there will be no personal income tax in Texas. So it's basically a kind of a hypothetical, right, Al Kaufman?
I think that's right. It's require a vote of the people anyway. Remember, it's talking about personal income tax, not corporate income tax. There's still some potential for the legislature to have corporate income tax.
Right. So Matthew Watkins, politics news editor for the Texas Tribune, that was kind of an issue about getting Prop 4 through, whether or not this would have an impact on the franchise tax, right?
Yeah, there was a little bit of a worry that this was kind of a backdoor way to get rid of the franchise tax, because the way it was written, it was you couldn't tax an individual. And there was a question of, could the courts interpret a business as an individual? There was a push to maybe change it to natural persons instead of individual. It seems like some of those concerns have eased up in the way the final kind of legislation was passed. You know, there is still some opposition to this, and that has been one of the reasons that, you know, beyond all the other reasons we've talked about that have been mentioned.
You know, there have been some big constitutional amendments that have passed in years have gone by. We talked about Prop 2 from 2005, which passed overwhelmingly in Texas, which defined a marriage as between one man and one woman. Did we have to have a prop passed in order to get to lottery? That was required, right?
Yes, we needed a proposition passed to get to the lottery. And at the time, politically, the argument was made that all this money will improve education. And in fact, all the lottery money went into the general fund. To some extent, it brought the state more money, but it wasn't dedicated to education in any way. Even if they did dedicate it to education, though, the legislature has the authority to just spend less other monies on education and save that money for other purposes. So those sorts of limitations don't really amount to too much, to be honest with you.
There were some propositions, and I think you had were involved in 2011, Al, about school funding.
Actually, it was earlier than that. I think it was in 1993 or 1994. There was a proposal to allow the state to have a limited ad valorem tax. As it stands now, school districts and cities and counties can have ad valorem tax. The state cannot. So the idea was this would be a much more equitable system, and that did not pass. I personally supported it, went out and fought for it, but we lost because the people in general were not in favor of any sort of statewide taxes, and that seems to be the position of the state electorate.
And so we do not have a referendum-type process in Texas where you can go out and get people to sign petitions and put something on the ballot. This is really the only time that Texans get to decide directly on policies, Al?
Well, of course, except they get to vote for their state representatives and senators and governor. But as far as direct,
yes, policy.
We don't have what they call in other states initiative and referendum, which is if you can get enough signatures on a petition, you can put something on the ballot and you can even amend the state constitution. There was a proposal to do that back in the mid-90s, and interesting coalitions occurred. The liberals and the conservatives agreed that they did not want it. The liberals didn't want it because they thought there'd be anti-affirmative action, anti-bilingual education, the way there was in California. The conservatives didn't want it because they thought there'd be pro-marijuana and pro-same-sex marriage put on the ballot. So because of those two things, both were afraid of what would happen if anyone could just put something on the ballot, because they've seen some horror stories in other states, especially California and Colorado. But it is a more direct way of changing the state constitution.
Grace Shemain, president of the League of Women Voters of Texas. What typically is a turnout for these types of constitution amendment elections?
Well, it's not very high, unless there is something, like I think right now I was reading that there may be 2.5% of the Texas population voting in this election. It might be up to 3%, but it's just not a huge amount of voters turnout for this election. Unless there is something going on locally that makes voters go and vote in a local election, then they generally don't aren't as interested in the state constitutional amendment election.
So that
but
tends to give.
Is there is a good election going on in Harris County, so we should be seeing a lot of people weighing in on these proposed constitutional amendments to the Harris County election.
Yeah, there's a mayor for a race for mayor in Houston.
Right.
And
yeah.
It's a pretty entertaining race. But also, only so few people vote in these constitution amendments. This gives those people who do vote quite a bit of say over the rest of the state, Grace.
That's right. And so I would really hope that anybody who goes votes in these elections know what is going on by going to our voter's guide. We try to be as unbiased and nonpartisan as possible. And they could find those voter guides at vote411.org or lwvtexas.org and compare the pros and cons, arguments for and against for each one of these. We try to make it in simple language so people could understand and voters can make an informed decision. So we're encouraging everybody to go vote, but the hope that people actually go and vote in this election is, we try.
Okay. I think you're doing a pretty good job. Let's go to a question from Sherry online. I don't understand Proposition 5. Why is the funding for state parks at risk? Matthew Watkins, he's a politics news editor for the Texas Tribune. Proposition 5, sporting goods tax to support state parks.
So yeah, when this tax was created in 1993, it was touted as this will go to fund the maintenance and operation of state parks.
So if I buy a kayak or something?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. But there's no law, there's no rule holding the legislature to that. And as often happens, they will sometimes, especially in kind of austere times, will dip into that fund to pay for other priorities. You know, the cost of education is going up. There's a lot of health-related, Medicaid-type things that are requiring state funds. And so sometimes when there's not a lot of money to go around, they'll dip into it and, you know, not give parks all of that money. The last two bienniums, that hasn't been as much of a problem, especially this session when there was a lot of money to go around, relatively speaking. But, you know, there have been years where only about 40% of that tax went to the parks. That can create some deferred maintenance issues, you know, some upkeep issues. And there has been a coalition of groups, tourism groups, and just supporters of the parks that have been saying, no, we need to hold the legislature to its original intentions and basically not give them a choice, but to spend that money on park upkeep.
Right. So our state parks get a lot of use. There's a lot of wear and tear, and people say they don't get the funding that they need in order to maintain them. And so Grace Chemaine, president of the League of Women Voters, were there some arguments in opposition to this?
You know, it was a little bit hard to find arguments in opposition to this, but the arguments were that they still would like the legislature to be able to decide during hard times when there's not enough money that they don't have to pay the money from this tax to the state parks, and that is their main argument against it.
And so to the question from Sherry, the funding for the state parks is not at risk. It's just sometimes someone sticks their hands in a cookie jar to pay for other things in Texas when the money that should go to state parks. Also, Proposition 6, cancer prevention research. Matthew Watkins, political news editor for Texas Tribune, they want to increase the maximum bond amount authorized for this to $3 billion. And this isn't the first time we've had to vote on this, right?
That's right. You know, we voted on the creation of this institute a while back. This is basically, CPRIT has, you know, two purposes. One is the kind of explicit cancer research idea. There's a lot of medical research that goes on in Texas, especially in the Houston area. And this has funded a lot of that research. You know, I know one article about this mentioned, you know, the cancer mortality rate has gone down since that passed. I'm not sure you can draw a direct line. There are different factors involved there. But, you know, this is this money would be spent to basically find cures, find treatments for cancer. The other idea here is an economic development one, which is that when you are attracting this kind of research, it brings in high paying jobs. You know, helps develop the economy. You know, you look at the impact that medical research has had on the Houston area. Supporters of this proposition would argue that spending this kind of money will help that in Houston and areas across the state.
Now, there was a scandal with CPRIT about how the money was allocated and some of the issues. That happened with the first vote on this. Did that all get fixed up? And should we be remembering that as we've been asked to vote on the next round of CPRIT funding?
So there are people who have made the argument against this proposition, making the exact point that you just made, which is that there were some scandals. The leadership of CPRIT has turned over, but, you know, basically some feeling that there wasn't enough vetting over how this money was being dispersed, and that maybe there were some issues of you know, favoritism in the disbursement of this money. CPRIT would argue that they have taken care of this, but some people are still skeptical and say that this is an opportunity for, you know, without the correct amount of oversight, that problems like this could arise again.
All right, we're taking another break. When we come back, we'll take your calls. Bonnie, you're on the board. We'll get you on the air. The number is 210-614-8980. We've got four propositions left to work through, and you can call in on anyone you want. 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I feel like Casey Kasem doing the top 10 countdown. We're doing the top 10 of the propositions that are on the ballot right now. There are 10 of them, and we're working our way through. We've got a long-distance dedication coming up here, but first, let's go to Bonnie on the phones, 210-614-8980. Bonnie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering what... which are poorly participated in, and school board elections and all those different small elections that we have to go to the polls so many times a year for, consolidated more into
okay.
a more general election.
Bonnie, thank you for that. Let me go to Al Kaufman, professor at St. Mary's School of Law. What would it take to consolidate some of these election days?
Well, that's something the legislature could do. They have the authority to do that, and they have the authority to change those dates and require school districts to use those dates. So historically, the local governments have had elections in odd-numbered years, and the general elections in even-numbered years. Some cities, like Houston we're talking about, is having theirs this year in November. But consolidating it to have fewer days has the advantage of requiring voters to go to the polls less often. The disadvantage is that the ballots get very confusing. If you have on the same ballot candidates for president and governor and state offices and local offices and local propositions and constitutional amendments and local taxes, it becomes incredibly difficult to educate voters about it. So there are pros and cons to that.
There are certain groups where they have the attitude, every Tuesday I drive past the local school. If there's an election, I go in there and I vote no. So that's one way of looking at it. But, you know, democracy is not just going to be one day out of the year. It's going to be an ongoing process. Grace Shemaine, president of the League of Women Voters, I'd like to hear your input on that.
it is an ongoing process, and we are working closely with the high schools and the TEKS to try to provide better civics education in Texas so that young and new voters understand the voting process and how to vote. And there are, you know, burdens and hurdles put in place by Texas to make it a little bit, to make it harder for voters to participate, for some voters to participate. And we try to guide them through those hurdles so that they can become a registered voter and that they know when elections are happening and that they can participate in every election and make an informed choice. It's a democracy, and the more people that we could get involved in our democracy, the better democracy we're going to have.
Okay, let's go to proposition number 7. This is funding public education. Al, you know a little bit about that. Can you talk about that? Al Kaufman, professor of St. Mary's School of Law.
I think all this would really do is slow down the development of the permanent school fund. And that was an old fund started at the time of the Constitution, 1876. Basically, all the money that's raised put back into the fund, and only the interest from it's used for public schools. I think this would probably allow the legislature to get by with spending less money on public schools because they're taking more money out of this fund. But long term, it would weaken that fund. But it's very hard to go beyond that.
And Matthew Watkins, politics news editor, Texas Tribune. This is basically like petroleum money?
That's right. This is land that was set aside a long time ago by state leaders and, 13 million acres. And it's, basically you can make money off of it from leasing the land, various other things. But yeah, it's land in West Texas, and that money has created a lot of oil revenue, and it's created a kind of a new revenue source for public schools.
And people are worried about depleting it or spreading it too thin, because it was like traditionally just allocated to first University of Texas, and then they said, okay, A&M, you get a little bit too, and now they're trying to deal more people in, right? Okay, that's wait on a
that's
second.
That's the permanent university fund you're talking about.
Oh, that's a different one.
This is the available school fund, which goes to public schools.
Okay.
Yeah, but some of the same sorts of lands were used, and they did discover oil on them. But that money contributes a few hundred dollars per student every year to the overall funding of the schools. And all this would do is it would put more money per student every year, but long term it would reduce the fund.
Now, Proposition 8, flood control. Well, this is the third prop on here that kind of deals with natural disasters that we're seeing as a result of increased climate change in Texas. Although the legislature refused to admit that there is such a thing as man-made climate change, here we are voting on three different propositions that are having some to deal with the impact of that. So, Grace Chamaine, Proposition 8, flood control. What are we voting on?
That is a good question, and I have I'm going to pass.
So Texas doesn't really have a lot of money or even a plan for dealing with widespread flooding problems. Matthew Watkins?
That's right, and this would is called a flood infrastructure fund. It would be managed by the Texas Water Development Board, and the idea would be after a disaster, you would be able to use this money to finance projects, whether it's recovery or improving the drainage, flood mitigation in certain areas. You know, obviously, I don't think many people have to look too far to see where examples where this could have been used. You know, there are storms in the Houston area, the Gulf Coast, the Beaumont area, you know, every year, multiple times a year. Exactly.
The flooding of the Guadalupe. So we're looking at where do we build things? How, you know, we know how water works. We're just letting people build where we know the water is going to go. And we actually have no mechanism to deal with that on a statewide basis. Proposition 9, exemption of precious metals. Al Kaufman, professor of St. Mary's School of Law. Texas wants people who have put their gold in the Texas Gold Depository. You don't have to pay taxes on it. Sounds like if you have gold, don't, you know, you might want to pay taxes, right?
Well, I mean, just like if you have any other precious material, you have to pay taxes on it. There's inventory taxes for everything that we have in the state. So to all of a sudden give an exception for precious metals, I just don't understand where this is coming from, to be honest with you. I think it's some people who want to preserve gold in one place and don't want it taxed, but there's people who want to preserve furniture in one place and don't want it taxed. So why this particular project got through, this proposal got through the legislature, I'm not sure.
Well, the word gold is there, so that should probably be a clue. Matthew Watkins, who would benefit from something like this?
Well, you know, the people who have their gold in the depository. You know, this was a depository that was set up by the legislature this decade. I want to say either 2 or 4 years ago. It is opening next year in Leander. You could possibly see this also as an attempt to incentivize people to put their precious metals in this depository. I'm not clear off the top of my head how filled up this is at the point, but you could see this as an incentive to put your money in this state-run facility.
So is this like the Fort Knox of Texas?
It's more or less, yes. You know, this was the lawmaker off the top of my head.
It was Giovanni Capriglione.
That's right. That's right. And just the feeling that, you know, that Texas has a lot of precious metals, and it would be better to keep it here than somewhere not in Texas.
But also the Texas separatists, the guys that want Texas to become an independent country, they were very much in support of this.
That's right.
So the last time Texas had its own gold depository was during the Civil War. And that got robbed. So it's got a great history there. Let's move on to Proposition 10, and this is the feel-good one. And so the law enforcement animals. So Grace Shemaine, president of the League of Women Voters of Texas, tell us about Proposition 10.
Well, this is one of my favorite ones. I really love Proposition 10 because it is a feel-good proposition. It is about law enforcement animals such as horses or dogs that have worked for a police department, and they are suddenly ready to retire, and dogs and horses that are that do this type of work are considered property of the county or the state, and they're not allowed to be given away. Any property is not allowed to be given away. All the property that's owned by the state has to be sold, and so they're considered property, and they have to be sold. This particular amendment, Proposition 10, allows those law enforcement animals to retire with their handler for free. And so the counties are able to allow those handlers to receive the animal for free when they're retiring. So it is a feel-good one. We've been having a good time taking pictures and photos of sheriff dogs and horses and promoting the constitutional election by using Prop 10 to get young and new voters out there who understand how important it is to protect our service dogs and horses.
Al Kaufman, is this an example of voters being asked to micromanage issues through the Constitution?
No, I think it's because the Constitution is so limiting that they have to have some flexibility to allow them to do what sounds like a very sensible thing to do. I want to go back to a little point, if I have a second, in terms of going out to vote. I've done a lot of voting rights work through the years, and I've talked about barriers to voting, and there are a lot of barriers to voting. But the problem is sometimes when we make those arguments, we intimidate some people from voting, or we discourage them where they say it's not worth voting. The fact is, it's you can register, you can vote, and you have to vote to elect good people. But in addition, the people who are elected look at who votes. And when they make decisions on what bills they're going to support or what proposals they'll support or what nominees they'll approve, they look at who votes in the last election. So your vote counts twice, who you elect and also who's going to be watching to make sure you have an effect on the process.
And let's make sure Texas democracy is strong. Get out there and vote and show them that you care and that you are paying attention. I want to thank all of our guests, Al Kaufman, professor of St. Mary's School of Law, Grace Shemaine, president of the League of Women Voters of Texas, Matthew Watkins, politics news editor at the Texas Tribune. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.